Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage takes the frustrations out of getting a mortgage by letting you safely share your financial information with the touch of a button. Get approved online in minutes at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was in the thick of it in the years that he utterly dominated the NBA. He's still the all-time leading scorer, and he's still in the thick of it as an activist, writer, thinker. He was front and center at the Democratic National Convention, so you know where he stands politically. But he's appealing now to a deeper reference point, the U.S. Constitution, to save us from ourselves. This hour on Point in an angry time. Take a deep breath, collect yourself, and let's talk politics and deep American values with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you wondering if we've lost our way in this angry time? Is there a better way for black and white, liberal and conservative, poor and rich, man and woman to come to terms? What is that way? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In Philadelphia at the Democratic National Convention, he was right there in the spotlight introducing Khizr Khan, who spoke of the loss of his son, of course, an American veteran, immigrant family. But here, before he stepped to the stage, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar talking to that big hall full of people in Philadelphia.
At its core, discrimination is a result of fear. Those who think Americans scare easily enough to abandon our country's ideals in exchange for a false sense of security underestimate our resolve. To them, we say only this: not here, not ever. Thank you.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar at the Democratic National Convention, and then, of course, stepped to the microphone, Khizr Khan, father of Humayun Khan, who gave his life in Iraq as an American soldier in 2004. Khan then made that tough challenge to Donald Trump, said, "Have you ever been to Arlington Cemetery?
Go look at the graves of brave patriots who died defending United States of America. You will see all faiths, genders, and ethnicities. You have sacrificed nothing and no one."
Khizr Khan there, introduced by my guest today, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who joins us now from NPR West in Culver City, California. Sports legend, author, activist. His new book, co-authored with Raymond Obstfeld, is out next week. It's called Writings on the Wall: Searching for a New Equality Beyond Black and White. You can find an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, welcome back to On Point. It's wonderful to have you here today.
Great to be with you, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. Did you have any idea when you stepped to the podium to make that introduction what a more than a firecracker you were introducing in Mr. Khan?
I actually had no idea. I had spoken to him for a few minutes prior to going on stage, and he seemed to be a very reserved and polite gentleman. That was how he came across. But he had some fire inside of him with regard to these issues, and they're very important issues.
Why were you chosen to introduce him? He's a Muslim. You're a Muslim. Is that the reason, or was there what? Why exactly were you tasked with that intro? It turned out to be a big one.
Well, I've been an advocate for tolerance, especially given the rise in hate crimes against Muslim Americans, and I've written about the various parts of this issue. And my very first history book, I talk about a Muslim who fought in the Revolutionary War, Peter Salem, who was very crucial in the Battle of Bunker Hill up there in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Right there in the final moments, he saved the day. Muslim Americans have contributed to our great nation at every turn from the very first.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, remind my listeners, if you'd be kind enough, of what a diverse career you've had since the fabled days of your basketball glory. I mean, you've been a very active guy on many fronts, with opinion journalism, with film, with writing history, with writing novels, fiction. You've got a very wide-ranging life.
Yes, I have. I had to do something after I retired. You know, you have the good fortune to have such a wonderful career like I had in the NBA, and people think that that's all you have to offer. But there was more there, so I just keep digging in and finding what I have inside of me and sharing it.
It's not exactly as though you've been on the bench here, but you're really on the court lately. You've got this book coming out right in the middle of a presidential campaign. You've been very active out and about and talking about national issues, as we've seen Black Lives Matter and so much blowing up here. What has you in such an active mode right now?
Well, I think it's a crucial time, and it's time for anybody, all Americans who care about what's happening to our country, they need to speak up and become involved, because things are at a very crucial point here. Our nation could turn in a very ugly direction if the trends that you see in the papers every day, and you hear different quotes from various political entities of one stripe or another, and it's scary stuff. And we really need to come to a point where we can talk to each other with respect and an open mind, and find out what's going on, and try to find some practical solutions that will help all of us.
Define that fear you have that we could turn in a frightening direction. What are the potential threats in terms of how the country's trending that have you concerned?
Well, there have been several. I've been, watched a number of Mr. Trump's rallies, and he's called for, like, violence against some of the people that are criticizing him. People have been roughed up at some of his rallies. And then, you know, we have much worse things happening, such as the murder of an imam in Queens, New York.
Mm-hmm.
He was assassinated by someone who felt that because of his faith, he was supposed to die. This is not what our nation should be about. This should not be what our political discourse is about. We have to find ways to understand and get along with each other. We've done that from the very first. And to step away from that solution at this point is really allowing ourselves to allow our great democracy to come apart and be in tatters. And we don't need that. We need to preserve this democracy and make it work for everyone.
It's interesting. Khizr Khan at the convention held up the Constitution and, of course, challenged Donald Trump about whether he had read that. Your book is very focused on the Constitution and the values there and how you say they can be put to such good use right now. But I'm interested, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, how you think we've come to this pass. What has brought us to this moment where you've got the kind of anger that we see at some of these political rallies, where you've got the depth of division that we have in this country? What has gone untended or unminded that's brought us here?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that change is starting to become apparent. The nature of our the population of America has become a little bit darker. You know, we have skin color. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Skin color. The ethnicity of Americans has taken a different shape, and there's not as many people from Europe who are in charge, and other people of European backgrounds see that as a problem, and because of that, they are reacting in a way that is really them giving into fear. All of the people that are saying those things, they didn't have any problem with General Colin Powell, his position of power and responsibility in our nation. Condoleezza Rice, same deal. What's the problem with President Obama? Just the fact that he's a Democrat? That should not be the issue. Should be about what these political leaders bring to the table in terms of leadership and ideas. And that's what we should be talking about.
Is it really just about, is race the main driver here? I mean, after all, you can find white Americans on either side of a political divide right now. For that matter, you can find people of color on opposite sides of a political divide right now.
That's true. But I think just the fact that it's different, it's not about, if you look at all the presidents up until Obama, they are all of European background. And all of a sudden, President Obama really exemplifies the change in the growth of people of various ethnicities becoming participants in the American democracy. I think that's a great thing, and it shows that our democracy actually works where everyone can participate. That should not be a cause for alarm.
Let's just speak to that in a very unvarnished way. Do you see any reason whatsoever to believe that the values embedded in the Constitution can't be carried out by a population that's changing in its color and its cultural background?
Well, you know, I saw Donald Trump say that he couldn't get a fair shake from the judge that was born in Indiana.
The Mexican ethnic
he's
background.
He's of Mexican heritage,
yeah.
But he was born in Indiana,
yeah,
and he's
course.
An American citizen. And Mr. Trump said that he couldn't get a fair shake because of this man's ethnicity. What does that have to do with anything? The judge is highly qualified and has every right and reason to be performing the job that he's performing. And as far as everybody can see, he's been doing a good job.
So can that be something, anything other than racism when that judge is called out in that way by this candidate?
I don't know what else you could call it. When you say someone's ethnicity makes it impossible for them to carry out a job that any person of any ethnicity could carry out, I think you have to look at that as the motivation.
I mean, Paul Ryan came right out and called that. He said that's the very definition of a racist statement.
And I have to agree with Mr. Ryan in that statement. He was absolutely on the mark.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with sports legend, activist, author Kareem Abdul-Jabbar about how to keep the peace in this country and follow core American values, maybe to a better path. He's out with a new book. It's called Writings on the Wall, Searching for a New Equality Beyond Black and White. Joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California. You can join us today as well. Are you wondering lately if we have lost our way? And what do you hear in the analysis, the appeal of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? Did you watch him introducing the fallen soldier's father, Khazir Khan, at the Democratic National Convention? What did you think? Here's a little bit more from that introduction in Philadelphia, introducing Mr. and Mrs. Khan at the convention, noting, I mean, Pakistani background, but they had come from the United Arab Emirates, emigrated to the United States. The first place they visited, you reminded the crowd there, when they moved to the U.S. was the Jefferson Memorial in Washington, D.C. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar quoted the inscription there in response to candidate Donald Trump's calls for a ban on Muslims entering the U.S.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Donald Trump's idea to register Muslims and prevent them from entering our country is the very tyranny Jefferson abhorred.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar last month at the convention in Philadelphia. But here was Donald Trump yesterday in West Bend, Wisconsin. He went in response to the police shooting and then big trouble in the streets of Milwaukee, though this was 40 miles north in a white community. He reached out there with that audience to, in his words, to African-American voters. He said Democratic Party social programs have failed African-Americans. He accused Hillary Clinton of bigotry.
We reject the bigotry of Hillary Clinton, which panders to and talks down to communities of color and sees them only as votes. That's all they care about, not as individual human beings worthy of a better future. They have taken advantage.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in California, what do you make of Donald Trump's assertion there that Democrats have taken advantage of African Americans, even to the point he says of bigotry?
I think that is a totally hypocritical statement. One of the reasons that the Republican Party has enjoyed so much success in the past decades has to do with President Nixon's Southern strategy, which was designed to take advantage of the hostility that white Southerners had toward people of color because of the successes of the civil rights movement. That has been a mainstay of Republican political dogma for decades now. And he seems to have forgotten that or is not even addressing that issue as part of what this problem is all about.
You write in your new book, Writings on the Wall, you say we often settle for a glorified falsehood in order not to face the harsh truths and then have to do something about them. It's just easier, you write, to go with the flow. Even if the flow is a current of lies, the lesson here, most people choose to feel good rather than do good. What's the challenge you're describing for this country right there?
Well, the challenge has to do with the fact that if we're going to deal with these issues that have to be dealt with, we're going to have to admit to certain facts. And I think the Republican Party seems to want to have their own facts. The facts are very clear. What are we going to do about these things? They don't want to do anything. They just want things to continue. The status quo is totally acceptable to them as long as they're in power. And I think they're going to have to get off of that stick because it doesn't work. It's not working for our country. It's not even working for them politically. They seem to be losing ground every day.
Take us back to the Constitution and how you think we should put that front and center again in dealing with the changes you see already here and more coming in the 21st century.
Well, we're going to have to figure out a way to make our educational system work for everyone. Education is a key to success for all Americans. It doesn't matter what their ethnicity. If our educational system works, we get things done. And there's been a notable lack of progress in that area that can be remedied, but we have to have a commitment, and that requires a commitment in spending and a commitment in finding the resources necessary to deal with the issues.
So there, the values point you're turning to is about equality of opportunity.
Equality of opportunity. It's not there from what I see. The Republicans spend most of their time trying to suppress minorities and poor people from voting. That seems to be more important to them because they want to stay in office and they don't want to deal with the problems. If they dealt with the problems, they would get more support from the people that they seem so reluctant to embrace.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar joins us. His new book is Writings on the Wall. Lots of callers for you, Kareem. John in Beloit, Wisconsin. You're on with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Hi, Tom, and hi, Kareem. I'm a big fan. I am a 47-year-old white male and Marine, and I think the right and left, the Republicans and the Democrats, in my opinion, have hijacked the kind of the whole system. And I think there is a huge upper class, and I think it's Democrats and Republicans, and I think those people manipulate things greatly. I also heard the speech by Mr. Khan, and I believe I'm a veteran, and what was said by Donald Trump was completely off base. I think the man is totally out of it. Back in the day, the Constitution, everybody came to our country. Most all of us are illegal aliens at some point. I don't care if you're Irish or whatever. Even the British invaded. You know, I mean, come on, the Germans, everybody. And I think we need to find a center piece instead of a far left and a far right, and I'll take any comments you guys have off the air. Thank you.
Appreciate your call,
well,
John.
Thank you, John, I agree with you completely. My grandfather was an immigrant. That's how my family got here from the West Indies. In fact, next year will be 100 years of my family in this country, and it was a great moment when my grandfather set foot on the shore because it allowed his offspring to have the great opportunities that are here and open to everyone. And we have to keep that process going. We can't shut it down because of fear. Fear is not should not be the motivation. As long as it's not about the giving into fear, but trying to deal with problems in a rational, humane, and equitable way, I think we will make the progress. And semper fi to you, John.
You know, John says he sees both Republicans and Democrats as having drifted away from some real concerns, though, kind of off in elite land, raises class as an issue here. What about that? I mean, you're pretty tough on Donald Trump, but what if you've got a bunch of people in this country that feel that the country is simply not working for them, that globalization and other trends have funneled wealth toward the top, and they're kind of just forgotten and left behind?
Those people have an excellent point that I am not denying their point that has happened and something needs to be done about it. But building a wall across the Mexican border is not going to change that. You know, we have to have real solutions that work here in the 21st century. We can't try to move things backwards. We can't move backwards. We have to move forward. And I think we've lost sight of that. You know, just the practical reality of how we have to deal with these issues seems to escape a lot of people. And that's what worries me.
Wayne in Binghamton, New York. Wayne, thank you for calling. You're on with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Kareem. I'm calling. I disagree with what Kareem said earlier, where he said that the problem with the United States fearing Islam or Muslims is the darkening of America. I totally disagree. I fear radical Muslims. That's a fact. It's not Christians that are going around, you know, killing people, beheading people. It's not Hindus. It's not Buddhists. It is Muslims. Now, granted, they are radical Muslims, and I have friends who are Muslims, and they are, you know, and I continually remind other people that it's not every Muslim that it's evil, not every Muslim that does this. But the fact is they are Muslims. So I agree with Trump when he says, you know, we have to screen them better and be more careful about allowing them into our country simply by the fact is that is who's doing all this, ISIS. So, you know, I have to disagree with Kareem on that.
Wayne, I appreciate your call. I mean, we have to note that we've had plenty of mass murders in this country that were not by Muslims. I mean, think about Dylann Roof and think about in Colorado and beyond. And yet, there's also that thread. And what do you say, Kareem, to caller Wayne?
The fact that the war in Iraq has created the rage and irrational violence that a lot of people from that area have absorbed. War has done that to those people. Islam didn't do that to those people. And we have to really be very careful about what we identify as the problem. Sure. People from that part of the world have been radicalized, and they're using violence to solve. They feel that violence can solve their problems. It can't, and it won't work. But Islam isn't teaching them that. It is their twisted interpretation of how they want to deal with their problems that has given birth to this horrible phenomena of all these people doing these horrible things. And, I totally agree with the gentleman. These things are horrible, and the people that are doing them are scary. But they didn't get that from Islam. They got that from their own twisted ideas of how to deal with their problems. It has nothing to do with them being taught by Islam to do these things. And I think we have to make that differentiation.
If you're right, if this violence, the radicalization is circumstantial, how does the U.S. confront that?
The U.S. has to fight its enemies. These people have declared themselves to be our enemies, and they need to be eliminated. I totally agree with that. Those people, they kill more Muslims than they kill people with other identities. But, you know, that's no consolation. The murder is murder, and it needs to be confronted and eliminated. And I'm glad that President Obama has done everything he could to combat this. But, it's going to take more than just our efforts. We have to get the whole world behind this and to confront ISIS and the people of that mindset. And take them off the playing field because they're creating so much damage.
But how do you address the radicalization? You can take people off. Many have been killed with drone strikes and more. Others have taken their place. How do you address the radicalization within that community?
The radicalization that's going on in that community is starts there in that community. Muslims in America have no influence on these people. And every time that there's one of these horrific incidents, people come to various Muslims and say, what are you going to do about it? There's nothing we can do about it here.
But we have to have a foreign policy that addresses it. And surely addressing the radicalization means more than taking them off the field, as you say, which sounds like bombing and killing.
No, you're right. We have to have a way to engage them, but from what I've seen, they don't want to engage. They just want to kill. You know, they've totally given in to violence, and they think that violence is the solution to their problems. And that can never be the answer.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is with us. His new book is Writings on the Wall. Zach is calling from Tuttle, Oklahoma. Zach, you're on with Kareem.
Tom, I guess my biggest question right now would be I have some family that are Muslim, and we have had discussion about there being a reformation in Christianity. You know, Christians don't go around making people accept Christ or die by the sword. My Muslim friends and family seem to argue me the fact that there has been no reformation in Islam. And when they take a verse that says you must make the unbelievers submit, they are literally saying you must make them submit. And, you know, it conflicts with our Constitution. And I don't think it's how you interpret the Quran and Sharia law conflicting with the Bill of Rights. I think we'll always have a problem if we don't come to grips with that, you know. And I guess that's my question. How do you deal with an ideology that can be taken, you know, verbatim out of the Quran and applied to their life, and they feel like they're doing what they should be doing for Allah?
Zach, let us pick it up. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, how about it? Is there an ideological, a doctrinal conflict here? And I hope you'll take the question seriously, because a lot of Americans, I think, wonder.
What he has to say about the lack of a reformation in Islam is 100% on point. He's absolutely correct, because the Quran is not supposed to be interpreted the way these people are interpreting it. And some of the verses that they use to justify the horrific things they're doing have no real reference to that. The whole idea of the rule of law has certainly, I think, escaped a lot of Muslims. They seem to have, in a lot of Muslim countries, there are two sets of laws, one for the rulers and one for those who are ruled. And, for example, the way that they treat women, it has nothing to do with what's in the Quran. In the Quran, women are supposed to be able, the Quran says that women should be able to choose their husbands, petition for divorce, they should be able to inherit and own property, and most importantly, the Quran says that your partner is one to the other. And there's nothing in most of the Islamic world where women's rights are protected and upheld according to what's in the Quran. They walk completely away from that and ignore it. And that ability to not enforce the law on everyone equally, that lack of clarity is really at the root of what this is all about, because it's too easy for them to say that women are second-class citizens, but everything else is okay. Everything else is not okay, and there has to be a change there.
Does the U.S. Constitution have the strength, the power to engulf Islam, embrace it, and bring it to its secular law format?
Well, I think that the fact that Muslims in America do not have to be subject to the whims of radical Islamic leaders is wonderful, and we need to promote that and keep these radical people as far away from our Muslim population as we can, because by and large, Muslim Americans are patriotic, and they obey our laws and respect our traditions.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century. Forget about digging through stacks of paperwork. This completely online process lets you safely share your bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button. Using a phone or tablet, you can get approved for purchase or refinance in just a few minutes. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour with sports legend, activist Kareem Abdul-Jabbar about how to keep the peace in this country and follow, he says, core American values to a better path. We're looking at race, American values, where we are now. His new book is Writings on the Wall, Searching for a New Equality Beyond Black and White. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Of course, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, all-time leading scorer in the NBA, super dominant there, six-time MVP, record nine-time NBA All-Star, played with the Milwaukee Bucks back 69-75, the L.A. Lakers 75-89, an epic career there. But he's been very, very active since then. He's active right now, saying, look to the U.S. Constitution for guidance on how to make our way forward as a multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-political nation in the 21st century. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California, and we have so many callers for you. David in Williamstown, Massachusetts. David, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. And boy, what a privilege this is, Mr. Jabbar, to speak to you. I'm in my mid-50s and grew up a Knicks fan, and my best friend was a Bucks and a Lakers fan, and we're still fine to this day, but it was quite a rivalry. I wanted to ask you, Mr. Kareem, if I may, if you had any correspondence, communication with Muhammad Ali in recent years, especially with regard to issues in the Middle East, and more recently, I know he's passed, but with regard to the situation in the United States. And I can't help but say that I will get off the line and give you clearance to answer my question. Thank you so much, and be well.
Well, thank you, Captain Over. I think that, you know, the last time I saw Muhammad Ali, he was dealing with the Parkinson's issue, and we really couldn't communicate. His ability to speak was so limited by that point. So that was like 5 or 6 years ago. And then, you know, from between that point and his passing, you know, his health deteriorated. But he believed that all people are going to be judged by the same supreme being in the same way, and that we have to make sure that our lives are about doing the right thing at the right time. And it doesn't matter what your faith or where you were born. It has to do with your understanding of right and wrong and doing the right thing. That was what he was all about, and he always tried to promote that to anyone who would listen.
David Cullen there with his references to the airplane movie that, of course, Clarence, and thank you, Captain Over, that you were in the first one there. Take us back to when you first thought about becoming a Muslim. I mean, Muhammad Ali did that, moving from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. You did it, going from Lew Alcindor to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Why did you do it?
I changed my faith because of what I learned about the slave trade, and then what I learned about Islam through reading the autobiography of Malcolm X. Reading that book really made me want to investigate Islam. And upon investigating it, I found it to be what made sense to me religiously. You know, I was raised Roman Catholic. I'd always had a belief in the Bible and some of the things that are taught by the Christian religion, but the whole embrace of slavery by the Roman Catholic Church really turned me off to Catholicism, and because of that, I investigated Islam and found something that I could believe in and support.
Got a question here from our website from Jeff, and it's got a lot of attitude in it. It's about the tension between African-American communities and police. It's about, seems to reference what just happened in Milwaukee, where a young man was killed, and there were big disturbances in the streets afterward. And he writes, I wonder if Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has ideas about how to appease the Black Lives Matter movement so we don't have riots when a young black police officer kills a young black suspect who had a gun and pointed it at the officer. You hear the attitude in there.
I hear the attitude, and I understand the gentleman's concern because everybody, every community has to respect the law and obey the law. And when that doesn't happen, and when people are being threatened with physical violence, gun violence, something has to be done about it. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here in California and judge the actions of a police officer in Wisconsin whose life might have been threatened. I don't know enough about it to comment on that. I just hope that the training that our police officers get enables them to discern the difference between someone who is a threat and someone who is not a threat. I always go back to seeing in my mind's eye, seeing the death of Tamir Rice. The police officer came out of the car and shot him in less than 2 seconds.
This is in Cleveland, the boy who had a toy gun.
The boy who was playing in a park, you know, early in the morning with a toy gun, and police car rolls up on him, and the cop steps out of the car and shoots him. To me, there's no justification for that, and I think those types of incidents are the ones that are problematic. The other types of incidents, oftentimes police officers are in the midst of doing a very tough job, and sometimes things get going sideways, and people get hurt. But there are situations where clearly the police need better training and the ability to discern between someone who is a threat and someone who isn't.
What about this? I mean, your father and grandfather were in law enforcement. Here's Donald Trump in Wisconsin. This was on Tuesday, talking about, he said, the war on our police must end. And then this.
Our job is not to make life more comfortable for the rioter or the robber or the looter or the violent disruptor, of which there are many. Our job is to make life more comfortable for the African-American parent who wants their kids to be able to safely walk the streets and walk to school.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the war on police and the appeal there. I just want to help the families just want to walk to school safely.
Well, every American that has any care for what's going on in our country would have to agree with that statement. You know, the police, they're the ones that are the thin line between a civilized country and chaos, and they need our support and our respect. Absolutely. There's no question about that. I've never said anything to the contrary.
So do you see Black Lives Matter protesters looking to give comfort to robbers and rioters?
I think they're mischaracterizing what Black Lives Matter is all about if they say that they're trying to give comfort to robbers and, violent criminals. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about is people who were harassed. For example, in Brooklyn, they finally got around to dealing with the issue that the police were basically just harassing people because that's what they were told to do. You had people who've been stopped by the police and questioned and let go 20 or 30 times.
Yeah.
The same person repeatedly. And that type of policing does not achieve the ends that we should all be supporting. That type of policing is just something that antagonizes the community and makes the people resent law enforcement and feel that they're not being respected and that they're living under occupation. That's the thing that we have to worry about and deal with, that type of circumstance.
Bobak in Boston, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Thank you for taking my call, Tom. Mm-hmm. It's an honor to be on a call with you, Kareem. I lived in many different countries, and you have a huge fan base around the world, and it's not just because of your basketball prowess. It's what you've done since then. I've got 2 points, and I'd like to take your comments on this. I'm a Muslim, by the way, and there are four main sects in Sunni Islam and one main sect in, well, strand in the Shia Islam, and none of these are violent sects. They're all peaceful, and the majority of the beheading and the brutality that we see with ISIS and before that with Al-Qaeda and other names that these different groups are given, this seems to be like a new name coming up every 2-3 years, but it's the same group basically just getting worse, are the Muslims themselves. So, and specifically more Shia Muslims, actually. They seem to be the main target of this. And the second thing is that if we're really serious about stopping this, and it's a very small minority, and it will really help the Muslim world, actually, is to stop the financing. And most of the financing comes from the Wahhabi sect, which is a very tiny sect of Islam, which is followed in Saudi Arabia. But I don't think the media gives it enough airing or doesn't discuss it. Recently, New York Times had some editorials. There is some investigation in Kosovo, for example, that sent more jihadis per capita than any other Muslim country, and it's only been a country for 17 years, if I remember correctly. And there are some very dangerous things that have happened, and the Saudis, by doing this, and the Wahhabis specifically, through the charity, supposedly charity work, they've gone and bought all these mosques. They go and brainwash a lot of young children, young kids. They go to the prisons and brainwash them. This is just a very concerted effort, and the end result is it's a very small hop from Wahhabism to the very dangerous and extremist Islam that we see. And
Babak, I appreciate your call. I want to jump in and let Kareem Abdul-Jabbar have a moment to respond. How do we deal with that? He's right that this is one sect, but with a lot of oil money behind it out of Saudi Arabia, that has propagated what can appear to be an openness to radicalization. What's the answer?
Well, I think the answer for us here in our country is vigilance. We have to be vigilant. We have to understand who is doing what. And that takes a lot of effort. But when we take that time and make that effort, usually we get things right, and we come down on the people who need to be who need to be checked on. I think that just the whole effort of competent intelligence gathering will serve our needs to the greatest end, and I think that that should be really what our country focuses on, finding out who the bad guys are and making sure that they don't get a chance to sneak into our country. The 9/11 guys, they did what they did with box cutters, and they used our infrastructure against us to do a horrific act. More intelligence and better screening of people will deal with that issue and enable us to come down on the people who need to be restricted and allow the other peaceful Muslims to go on their way.
Have the problems within some sects of Islam and the radicalization there over an extended period of time now, have they ever caused you to question your own Islamic faith?
Well, no. Nothing I've seen has caused me to question my faith because I've studied enough about Islam to understand what Islam is about and then what fascism is about. And there's a place there where people go from being Muslims to becoming fascists. And just it's all about their interpretation of life, whatever it is, religion or any other issue. It's about what they say. And it ends up being where you have to deal with this authoritarian fascist mindset that takes over these people and starts them on this violent path. And you have to be able to identify those people and deal with them accordingly.
Earl in Virginia Beach, Virginia, you're on with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. And mm-hmm. Kareem, it is an honor to be on the phone with you. And I'm glad that the last few callers had the opportunity to clear up the fact that it's not a matter of Islam that is creating all the problem, because I'm a Christian. I'm retired military, but yet still, if we be truthful to ourselves and we look at all the things that have been done in the name of Christianity, starting with the crusade, going back and coming all the way through to what happened in South America and the various countries in the name of spreading Christianity, but yet still we don't ostracize Christianity and say all Christians. So again, that is an issue. It, as it is rightfully said, it's just a small sect, and what we need to do as a country and as a people is to have honest dialogue, be able to be honestly talk to each other, because there is so you could pay me and tell me to argue any one of those points, and I can find a point, because there's legitimacy in some of the things that Donald Trump says, even though he's way off, and there's definitely legitimacy in what Hillary Clinton and folks to the left say. But the thing is, what we need to do is be honest with ourselves, look at each other's vantage point, and really have an honest conversation.
Earl, I really appreciate your call. Our time is short. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you've written in Writings on the Wall compellingly about this country. What's your biggest hope for this country in this century? What's your biggest fear if we don't get it right?
Well, my biggest hope for this country is that we continue to live up to the promise and ideals of the founding fathers. They were all about talking to each other to find out the best way to deal with our problems, and it takes an honest and what's the best word for me to use? A sincerely felt attempt to deal with the facts. And as long as we base our actions on the facts and what is the best solution, I think we'll get to where we want to get to, because that's how it was designed to work. And it works when we apply those principles.
If we fail, in a word?
If we fail, we're going to have chaos and a whole lot of people wishing that this hadn't happened. So, I'm all for people who want to figure out who their peaceful, law-abiding neighbors are and move forward from there, because that's how we make progress.
There's the appeal from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He writes eloquently about it in his new book, Writings on the Wall, Searching for a New Equality Beyond Black and White. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, thank you so much for being with us today. Great to have you.
It was nice talking with you, Tom. All the best.
All the best to you. Thanks for joining us, listeners. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.